This is Seeing Red, the New York Soccer Roundup. Now in our second decade of bringing you the best independent New York Red Bulls news and opinion with your hosts, Mark Fishkin and Joe Goldstein.
In a snow globe of Allianz Field, the Red Bulls pick up their first road point of 2023 in a 1-1 draw against Minnesota United. The field was not good. The game was not really good. A point is a point, and the Red Bulls look to build momentum ahead of another home game Saturday night against Columbus Crew SC. It's Seeing Red, the New York Soccer Roundup. I'm Mark Fishkin. I'm here with Joe Goldstein. Tonight on the show, we'll go inside the draw in Minnesota in conditions that should make it very clear that a winter schedule would not work, frankly, in MLS. We'll give our Bull of the Week. The Red Bulls 2 schedule is out and has a really interesting wrinkle. The USMNT coaching morass, as some really ugly, ugly facts came to light this week. The World Cup 2026 will have a really funky, expanded lineup and format we'll discuss. We'll preview Female Empowerment Night at Red Bull Arena Saturday, 7:30 against Columbus. We'll interview and chat with Gustavo Guimarães of Territorio MLS. And then your email. Joe, how are you, sir?
I think that I'm doing better than most Red Bull fans at this point in the season. I think we've had a tough go of it so far.
We had a tough go of it, and on this field, in these conditions, I guess the question is it really even fair to evaluate how good this team is or where they are after three matches, after a game like that?
Yeah, I think that most real analysis of this team is going to have to wait at least another week. I think with the conditions the way they were, the team played the best that maybe they could under those circumstances. I don't know. Maybe someone could push back on that against me, but I thought that they did well enough to create opportunities that could have won them the game.
Right.
They just, you know, again, failed to finish. I think that we've got a little bit of Groundhog's Day so far with the offense.
Right, but at the same time, a field condition like this, and to be clear, both coaches call the field conditions poor. Mm-hmm. Struber called it unprofessional and bad, and a bad look for the league. The indelible image of this game is the Red Bulls training staff scraping the field clear before kickoff with look like the lids of coolers, which... First of all, the fact that Red Bull's staff was involved at all in clearing the field was a bit of a joke. Of course, mm-hmm. after halftime, it was evident that the Minnesota ground crew had only gone to work on the side of the field that Minnesota would be attacking in the second half, which for me, I mean, that's grounds for a fine from the league. I mean, the grounds crew created an unfair advantage. And to be clear, and I'm sure our listeners have heard this, Minnesota United completed just 48% of their passes on Saturday night, which is the worst mark in that stat in 27-plus seasons of Major League Soccer. It's a shockingly low number, considering that some of those balls could literally be passed for 2 or 3 feet away between the players, and the Red Bulls didn't do any better. They just had 52% completion, which is, I'm sure, one of the worst 10 marks in league history. And so on a night when, you know, Minnesota Stadium was packed, it was their home opener, do you delay the kickoff? The snow was blowing around. I mean, it looked great on TV from an aesthetic standpoint. The orange ball, who doesn't love a good orange ball match? But the ball wasn't rolling. And you can credit the Red Bulls in the first half for just going aerial long balls to try and create something. And similar to what we've seen in previous matches, those first 10 minutes are always all New York.
Yeah, and, you know, at some point, I think when we start to see more integration with Dante and this team, I think that you're going to see some more early goals from this group. And then that sets up the game very nicely for how they'll play the rest of that. But when you're struggling to do that already. You're playing in these conditions, which obviously were really difficult. I mean, I think back to that, both of Lewis Morgan's chances in this match that I think were, you know, his best clear-cut chances. The field is just destroying whatever kind of flow you can try to get into there. He tries to chip the keeper. The ball's, you know, dying right in front of him as he's about to strike it. It was an ugly match, and I would like the league to maybe look at, you know, when you're going to be playing a snow match, setting some sort of guidelines around
standards.
What is acceptable and standards for what is acceptable for the field conditions,
especially since allegedly the field is heated.
Right.
Now a heated field isn't necessarily, you know, it's not a frying pan. It's not a baking sheet. It's not going to simply immediately melt everything on top of it. It means that it's not going to, the field itself won't freeze. But the conditions were just unplayable. And nevertheless, New York comes out, raring to go, doing the best that they possibly can. Lewis Morgan unleashes three shots in the first 6 minutes of the match. Hits the woodwork once, getting shots on target for sure. You know, once again, New York, of the nine shots in the first half, sorry, in the 12 shots in the first half, New York took nine of them. And of course, as so often happens, one slight, you know, bad deflection, Bongole Hangwale, you're welcome, gets Minnesota's only two shots on goal of the match. Within a second and a half of each other, Coronel makes a phenomenal save on the first, but of course he can't make the second. Hangwale is uncovered in the box on a corner kick, and that's a missed assignment, Joe.
Yep, and you know, I think that we've talked about how well the Red Bulls have played so far this year. Having a breakdown like that on a set piece is something that we should. You know, we should be looking at moving forward, because we know that they've struggled with sort of clearing out after the first chance on set pieces in the past. And so seeing it again here, not great. I'm still kind of giving them a pass on just about everything in this game just because of how gross it was. But
the field condition doesn't let Hangwale stand all alone
right.
in the six-yard box.
Not.
It's a missed
It does not. And, you know, credit Minnesota for sportsmanship, allowing Andreas Reyes to pretty much have a free header later on.
For sure, for sure. On a great, great corner from Tolkien. Tolkien said, literally, it's just how we drew it up. I think verbatim, he said, that's just how we drew it up. New York gets even in the match in the 65th minute. A number of substitutions, Omer, Manuel, and Van Zier came in. And, you know, by that time, the field was just totally chopped up, and New York had to withstand, I think, a late charge from Minnesota to make the game go. And then, you know, in injury time, of course, with one of the last kicks of the game, Robin Lud makes a phenomenal scissor volley, and Omer Fernandez meets him literally in the air, throwing his leg far above where anyone's leg should be, athlete or not. It was a phenomenal save. Although, to be fair, Coronel was there, right? He had it covered.
Yep.
But just the image of the two players in the air, a high degree of difficulty from both. And New York walks out with a 1-1 draw. Again, it's three matches without a win on a night where the field conditions, I mean, it wasn't soccer. It was really something else. Struber says after the match, we must score. Mm-hmm. For me, the bottle is half full and not half empty. I have a very good feeling. Our moments will come. We can see how hard we work today. I'm looking forward for our next home game against Columbus. Every game is a big challenge. We're looking forward. We have to do something. We have to work hard again in training. Hopefully next week, the win in hand for us and our fans. And so the one thing that I will take away from the match, Kindra de Saint-Aubin was the color commentator on the match, and I have no issue whatsoever with men or women calling the match. What I do have concern, especially in this new world of national commentators. She is based in Minnesota, and she calls Minnesota United games. A number of times during the match, she was, I think, kind of right. It's okay to call out, yeah, the home fans are really supporting their team, and that's really great. There was one point where she said, you know, these fans deserve a victory because of how into the game they are. And for me, a comment like that kind of crosses a line for me into homerism. That, like, does that mean that the Red Bulls didn't deserve Rebel fans didn't deserve a win last week, you know, showing up and being in full voice at home? It was really the first time in 3 weeks of season pass that I was kind of like, not so great. Otherwise, I thought she added a ton to the broadcast. But, like, and we're going to talk about it because Cangelosi is finally calling a match. He's calling the Red Bulls match this week, and it'll be interesting to see how he balances things, as he always does.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how he does. I'll admit that I did not listen to the match this past week. I had it on, but I was not listening, so I can't really comment on how well she did or didn't do. But yeah, I never liked to have homerism in the commentary itself. Hopefully that's not something
baby.
You see a ton of. Yeah.
You talk about a homer. All right.
Yeah.
Bowl of the match for the draw against the Minnesota?
I'm going to give it to John Tolkien. I thought he was phenomenal on the day.
No, I'm giving mine to Andres Reyes. When you make the MLS Team of the Week, that is a door opener to bowl the match. So Tolkien and Reyes, congratulations for making bowls of the week. A couple of in-between notes before we get to the Columbus game. The MLS Next Pro schedule came out earlier this week after Rochester, New York FC, which with one of, frankly, the worst club crests and fonts in recent U.S. soccer memory, failed. Once again, Rochester, for I think the third time, has lost their soccer team because of poor management. Jamie Vardy came into this league with great bravado and fanfare. I don't believe he had been involved in the team in a number of months, and they couldn't get it together. So not only does it leave a hole in the schedule, because it leaves the league at 27 teams, they actually had a U.S. Open Cup date that they had to forfeit, which means that two other teams could have had an opportunity to play in the tournament, and now they don't. And so I believe it's Pittsburgh Riverhounds gets a free pass to the next round. Just, you know, for the fans in Rochester, such a cautionary tale. Those fans of a certain age remember the heyday of the Rochester Rhinos. They won the 99 U.S. Open Cup. They beat a number of MLS teams to win that title. The Red Bulls 2 schedule, of course, they'll be playing at Montclair State again. And for some reason, Joe, and maybe this has to do with the university while class is in session, the majority of the spring home matches are Sunday nights at 7. Not great, Bob. Not great.
Not great. Not great. I mean, these are already games that when you're looking at Red Bulls 2 in USL, they're already not very well attended, which I, you know, is a shame, but I think that it's understandable based on how many soccer matches can any one fan get to in a weekend. So I understand that. It makes it a lot harder when these matches are generally attended by families, and you're seeing lots of young kids at these.
Not Sunday night at 7.
Not Sunday night at 7. So that part kind of stinks. I got to imagine it has something to do with the university.
Yeah.
It would be a shame if Red Bull, specifically scheduled those dates maybe to maximize player availability.
But, I would think so.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can't play on Saturday if the entire league, if MLS is playing on Saturday, you can't play on Saturday.
Yeah.
Could you make the game Sunday at 1 or Sunday at 3?
Right. Right.
Sunday
those
at
would
7.
Be. And to get students, I've, you know, for years have talked about how at MSU it would be great if they could get students in more regularly, and that obviously makes it difficult.
Yeah. The other big news of the soccer week, of course, is the release of the report with the whole Claudio Reyna, Mrs. Reyna, Greg Berhalter flap after the World Cup this year. when it really became clear that the Reinas may be the worst American soccer and sports parents that I possibly could know. The notion that apparently since poor Gio Reyna had been with the U.S. team, Claudio apparently on the regular would text U.S. soccer leadership to ask if a red card can be rescinded in a youth game. He clearly had shared his disgust on Gio not being involved with the World Cup. His wife made some really just ugly comments. They were just ugly. Something like, I can't believe, frankly, like, I can't believe what the coach says goes, in essence, I'm paraphrasing, which, you know, I mean, listen, you cannot be a fan of Greg Berhalter. That is totally acceptable. You can say that you don't approve of the job he did with the U.S. national team under his tutelage. But you can't say that the players and the families around the players can get to pick and choose what notions of the program they're happy about and what they're not. What the coach says goes. And the fact that they were seeking retribution by sharing this ugly incident when Berhalter was a teenager, and I am absolutely not defending 18-year-old Greg Berhalter for striking his then-girlfriend and now wife of 25 years and mother of his four kids. But trust me, that is not where I'm going for. The point I'm making is the Reinas shared this piece of information in an attempt to harm Berhalter after they didn't play his kid. He didn't play their kid in the World Cup. Ugly, ugly, ugly.
Jim. Ugly, ugly, shameful. I mean, a lot of the comments that came out of that report were just gross. And the retort from the Reinas' lawyer wasn't much better, you know. they wanted to show just one side of this story, and I mean, what other side justifies the actions that the investigation unearthed? I don't know. I feel kind of bad for Gio in all this.
I feel very bad for Gio.
Like, how much could you even? I mean, this is your parents. They've apparently been like this for a very long time, and that's got to be really tough to deal with as a player.
Which will follow him now.
Yeah, because no matter what else happens with his career, his parents' tinkering will be the thing that follows him everywhere. And, you know, you got to feel bad for the kid in that situation. U.S. soccer, man.
Well, I mean, at a time where you need U.S. soccer to be together in lockstep, this entire episode has set the entire – you can make the argument that U.S. soccer is, you know, is dysfunctional to begin with. But this is a new level of dysfunction. You know, interesting, yeah. Claudio Reyna left his post at Austin FC. He was the sporting director kind of ahead of this news – because I'm sure he knew that would come out. Mm-hmm. I mean, would you hire Claudio Reyna to run your team right now?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. And, you know, the word was that Reyna was actually up for Ernie Stewart's job before Stewart got it. And so certainly some frustration there. So now there's no GM, there's no sporting director. Anthony Hudson actually did call in Gio Reyna to the Nations League camp and said publicly, it's all behind us from the playing standpoint. We're happy to have Gio in camp, and you hope that that will get the kid ready to go. In any case, ugly, ugly, ugly. Maybe not ugly, but certainly strange. The World Cup 2026 has been confirmed by FIFA to have – it'll be the first 48-team tournament. And FIFA confirmed this week there'll be 12 four-team groups, which originally I think they were shooting for 16 three-team groups, which would have been a very awkward situation. And so instead, the first and second place teams of 12 groups and the top eight third place teams of 12 groups will advance to a knockout round that starts in the round of 32. So they're going to play 40 more games, which I mean, I guess you can argue More World Cup. Hey, that's great. And
I have no doubt more
games to sell out in the United States and Mexico and Canada. But it's just a lot. And many of these, I mean, I don't know if you extend the duration of the tournament to do this. I know many of these stadiums have other events going on, even booked now, you know, into 2026. Anyway, more football. All right, let's get into this week. This week, Saturday at 7:30, Red Bulls host Columbus SC as New York still looks for its first win of the season. Columbus won 1-1 for 4 points. They're eighth in the East, 2 points in four places above the Red Bulls. Last year, the crew went 10-8-16 for 46 points. They were eighth in the East. They missed the playoffs, the most draws in MLS last season. They have scored four and conceded five in their three 2023 matches. The second most goals conceded in MLS, along with DC, Toronto, Montreal, Portland, Salt Lake, Vancouver, Colorado, and Houston, and fewer goals conceded than Charlotte, who has conceded the most in the league. Last season, they scored 46, conceded 41. Last season, the second best defense in the East. Looks maybe a little different this year. They're 0-1-1 this season away from lower.com field. Last season, they got 10 draws and 4 losses on the road. 10 draws, excuse me, and 3 wins on the road, which is a really good road record. New this year, Ecuadorian center back Gustavo Villasia from Colorado. American striker Christian Ramirez, former Loon, returned from Aberdeen, and Colombian left back Jimmy Madronda came in from Seattle. Jonathan Mensah, who was a captain of this team, is now in San Jose. Haitian winger and former Red Bull Derek Etienne is now in Atlanta. And Brazilian midfielder Artur, who famously injured himself seriously at the start of the 2019 season against New York, is now in Houston. Wilfred Nancy has come into this team from Montreal, replacing Caleb Porter, who met his way out of Columbus. They're rebuilding. And while the team may look weaker on paper than last year's squad, that, you know, Montreal was a big surprise last year, and Columbus could outperform expectations with an unassuming squad. So the team got younger, bringing in 23-year-old American center back Philip Quinton, who made his debut this year. They also have 23-year-old Canadian right back Mo Farsi, a 21-year-old American Aiden Morris, the younger brother of Jordan Morris, and 23-year-old Romanian winger Alexandru Matan. So, I mean, they not exactly going the Red Bulls route, but they've definitely gotten significantly younger. Their three games in MLS this season, they started off with a 4-1 loss in Philly, where Philly scored all the goals, including an own goal. They had their home opener. They beat DC 2-0 on Zellerion Brace. And then they went to Toronto last week and got a 1-1 draw on a Jimmy Madronda goal 15 minutes from time. These two teams are old-school 96 combatants. They've met 89 times. The Red Bulls trail 36, 40, and 13. New York hasn't won the last two meetings. There hasn't been a clean sheet between these teams in the last four games. It seems that these teams meet often in March. They've played six times in the month of March, and New York leads 2-1-3 if you want to really dig in. The last time they lost the crew in March was 2002, and that was before some of our listeners were born. The all-time leading scorer against Columbus is BWP with 8 goals, and a whole bunch of folks have a single goal. CCJ, Sean Nealis, Tom Barlow, and Frankie Amaya, and John Tolkien each have a goal against the crew. So here is most likely Wilfred Nancy's 3-4-3. Eloy Room, the Curacao national team keeper, who had 9 clean sheets last season in goal. Let's see. We're looking at a back line of Phil Quinton, Milos Deganek from Australia, who played a Red Star last year, and Stephen Morera, a Frenchman. Mo Farsi, a Canadian, on the right of the midfield, had 2 goals and 12 assists. He moved up from Columbus Crew 2. Darlington Nagbe, the ageless one, 3 goals last year. Aiden Morris with an assist. Yaw Yaboah from Ghana on the right. And then the attacking three are, well, two of the three are absolutely known quantities in MLS and are frankly terrifying. Lucas Ellerayan, who is actually an Armenian international through blood, if you can believe it. 10 goals and 7 assists last year and absolutely lethal on free kicks. And then, oh, by the way, Cucho Hernandez, who came into the team last year and all he did was score 14 goals and 5 assists. Splitting between Columbus and Watford. And then there's the newcomer, Alexandru Matan, the Romanian, 3 assists last year. So, you know, this is a team that has a lot of attacking skill. This may be a team for once, Joe, that doesn't come into Red Bull Arena and just sit back.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely going to be the case. I was on the Upper 90s podcast last week. I guess they're airing it this week, maybe
this is
today.
The former Massive Report,
maybe.
Well, I mean, okay. Upper 90 show, yes, terrific.
Right. What they'd expressed to me was that their concern about playing Red Bull is that they've been playing three in the back and trying to use the center backs as
pushing forward,
trying to break lines with their passes, and that scared the hell out of them coming up against a team like Red Bull likes to press. They also said that they felt that maybe their front line was a little bit short and could struggle against guys like Nilis and Reyes to make much of anything if they're going to try to play long balls against them. So those two things could work out really well for the Red Bulls. I think that the attacking group here is very, very good. Darlington Nagbe and his ability to hold on to possession and spread the ball around the field is something that the Red Bulls have struggled against in the past and likely will struggle a little bit against here. It'll be interesting to see if Struber wants to run just a single forward out, similar to what he did against Minnesota, as a way to combat that and give Nagbe a little bit less space to operate in. Otherwise, I mean, we got to see Dante on the field. I think that him starting a game is going to be critical to getting him, you know, confidence and really going, especially because, you know, we keep talking about those first 10 minutes about how good the Red Bulls look when they come out of the gate and how much energy they have. Obviously, you can't keep that up for a full game. And so seeing Dante hit the ground running with the full team, I think, would be really good and likely lead to one of those early goals that they so desperately need. And if they can do those things, then they'll be successful.
For New York, obviously, Dante Van Zier, as you said, has to start. It'd be interesting if we see a Van Zier-Corey Burke pairing up top, yeah, because I think that's something that the fans definitely want to see. And again, I think you have to scratch the midfield performances altogether from last week in Minnesota because the field wasn't playable. I mean, it was, you know, long balls to the wings and the forwards, hoping they can get on. Look for New York to play through the middle, to break the lines. Look for Luquinhas or Lewis Morgan to do some damage, especially if we're talking about if the wings can get pushed back a little bit, be challenged into making mistakes. And also, when you're playing a young team coming into a tough atmosphere, that's something that you really want. So we'll give our predictions after we go around the East. It's a very intra-Eastern weekend. The lone East-West matchup Saturday at 7:30 is Atlanta at top of the East against Portland, sir.
I think that they are talented enough to beat Portland. That's at home, right?
That's at home, yeah.
Yeah, they should win that game.
Montreal is winless, and they welcome Philadelphia Union, who have advanced into the CCL quarters, their second match of the week.
I think maybe Montreal gets their first one here.
I think it's a point. I don't think Montreal's good. The Revs are coming off their first loss of the season. They got crushed by LAFC 4-0 last Sunday night. And they have Nashville, who has yet to concede a goal.
Yeah, but they have to go up to New England to do it. And I think the Revs will at least get a point out of that one.
All right, the blue team won on an own goal at home last week, 1-0 against Miami, and they host DC United, who are 1-1-1.
I'm picking the other team every time we talk about
this
City.
Is the Meteor game.
DC.
You're
DC
picking
Meteor.
DC.
All right. I'll pick DC.
I'm rooting for the sinkhole. Orlando, who is unbeaten in the league, and by the time we get there, will have played Tigres at home in a massive CCL match. You know that Perea is going to rotate as long as the team's still in CCL. And they're playing a Charlotte team that has conceded the most goals in the East that got smacked 3-0 at home. They've lost all three of their matches.
Yeah, I think if Charlotte can get a draw here, that would be massive for them. But I think Orlando is going to win even with the rotated team.
So Toronto, like the Red Bulls, are 0-1 and 2, and they're hosting Miami, who are coming off their first loss of the season.
I'll call this one a draw.
Chicago, with a single point in two matches played, welcomes FC Cincinnati on 7 points, and they're going to contend in the East, Cincinnati.
Yeah, and I think that Chicago is not going to be the team to slow them down this week. They'll get the win on the road.
Indeed. And then our game Saturday night at 7:30. The weather looks certainly warmer than it was for the home opener. I think 46 at kickoff, which, again, for mid-March is pretty darn good. They're hosting the Crew at 7:30, Red Bulls and the Crew.
Prepare to be roasted. I'm going to call this. I like the Red Bulls' chance in this game. I'm going to call it a 2-0 victory.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know what to do now.
I guess win of the season.
I'm going to call it a 1-1 draw because I dare to be different. When we're back on Seeing Red, we've got Gustavo Guimarães of Territorio MLS. Keep it here.
You're listening to Seeing Red.
Back on Seeing Red, the New York Soccer Roundup. Red Bulls getting ready to take on an intriguing Columbus Crew side on Saturday night at Red Bull Arena. And when we think about intriguing, our next guest definitely fits the bill. That's Gustavo Guimarães of Territorio MLS coming back to Seeing Red. How are you, Gustavo?
Very good, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. So we're 3 weeks in with this team, and they've scored one goal. They've given up two. I'm just kind of curious. Is it too soon to really give this team a report card? They're below the line. They've met or beaten the XG rating in every game for every opponent they've played, and yet I don't think anyone's satisfied with what they've seen so far. What do you think?
I still I think they need more time, even though, to be quite honest, I don't think the 2 points does not relate it well from what I've seen so far. I think they dominated Orlando in week first. They had the better chances to score, and they ended up losing the game. Nashville wasn't okay. Nashville was a fair tie. And against Minnesota, again, the same scenario from the Orlando game. They had the better chances. It should have been a different score if they were more clinical in front of the goal. But it is what it is. 2 points so far. Minnesota, too, the weather really affected the field. The conditions weren't great. But in the end of the night, there's only 2 points, right? So I still think it needs more time.
Yeah. The game, obviously, this past Saturday, to call it a proper football match, I think, is a bit of a joke. I mean, both coaches were unhappy with the field conditions. And yes, there was a surprise amount of snow, perhaps. The field is heated. You can say that the Minnesota grounds crew was helping their team only in the second half. But at the end of the day, this was not... This was an advertisement. Why is Minnesota playing a game at home before May? I just, everyone talks about, they want to switch to a European schedule and play through the winter. I mean, I think Saturday night was a great example of why we really should not do that.
Agreed with you. I agree with you. And I stand by what Struber said. It was not professional at all to see the field with those conditions. It wasn't fair to both teams, even though, just like you said, the home crew were trying to help them more than to the Red Bulls too. But it should not be played under those circumstances. It didn't favor both of the teams. You saw Minnesota had completed only 48% of their passes, which is the lowest number ever by an MLS team.
Think about how many matches have been played in MLS, and no one has ever done worse connecting passes in the history in almost three decades than Minnesota last Saturday night. It really amazing.
Absolutely. And even the Red Bulls, too, they didn't complete. Their pass accuracy was only 52% too. So it was not natural. It was not okay. And it reflected on the quality of play, too.
Yeah. So let's just kind of work backwards, forwards, and give our general impressions of the team so far. Obviously you concede a penalty kick, fine. The one goal that New York conceded at Allianz last week was, a zonal marking nightmare, right? With Minnesota's score literally standing all alone, getting two bites of the apple inside the six. That's a missed assignment, to say the least. But I think in general, New York's defense has been pretty impressive. I mean, you concede only twice in three matches and one on a penalty. You got to think that this is a solid unit, especially given where we thought this platoon might be at the beginning of the season.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And they kept Facundo Torres under control in week first. Mukhtar didn't play the whole game against the Red Bulls here too, but didn't produce too much. And again, it happened overall against Minnesota too. Not too many chances for them to score. They scored their goal on a set piece situation. And the defense has been solid. Reyes has been great. Just like Strube said the other day, a player for Europe,
yes,
which I totally agree with him. Sean has been a good captain too, leading the back line, screaming with the players, calling the players too. And so far, the defense hasn't been the problem after the departure of Aaron Long. Everybody thought, oh, we need improvements. We may need someone new. But it's not the problem right now.
Yeah. The problem's up top. I'm curious what your thoughts are so far on Van Zier. He's yet to get more than 26 minutes in a match. And again, that field in Minnesota, perhaps not the best measure of what this guy can do, because we're not going to be playing on too many ice fields through the season, hopefully. Is there reason to be optimistic about him? I mean, I think Red Bull fans are of two minds, right? They want him to come on and change the game at once. There's also a realization that he's still getting up to speed.
Agreed. I think he needs more time too. Didn't have too many practices with the team and that condition. What we saw last Saturday, the field, it didn't give him any favor, because he's supposed to be a very technical player. And you could see he wasn't comfortable playing there. And against Nashville, very few minutes too. I'm excited to see what he can do against Columbus, because then maybe he could start. I'm expecting him to start. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say fourth game into the season, it's about time.
Yeah. Yeah. Columbus is really the first team that we've talked about, perhaps Orlando, although game one, you kind of throw it out at the window, that actually has the ability to play, right? This is a team with lots of attacking talent, right? Zelarayan, Cucho, these are players that are dangerous, and this is a team that's comfortable with the ball at their feet. They're not one of these teams that are going to give New York the ball back like we've seen over the last 2 weeks with Nashville and Minnesota and dare us to do it. I can't see, although we know what opponents do when they come to Red Bull Arena, but Columbus has the talent to really play New York and not sit back and just absorb and try and hit on the counter, although they have the talent to do that as well. So I'm curious what you see out of what we might see on Saturday night.
I'm expecting them to do exactly just like you said, play the game. And it can actually favor the Red Bulls. They can benefit from that Columbus play of style play. If you remember what happened last season, it was at the beginning of the season too, a draw, 1-1 draw. And Columbus had so many chances to score.
Yeah.
And Etienne had a goal, an incredible goal. He lost. He missed. Zardes as well. And it's going to be a game where, just like you said, I'm expecting Zelarayan to have the ball many times, many touches, and build up that offense. They need to observe and keep Cucho under control too. He's a very good striker. You can't give him spaces. You can't give him many touches. If you do, he's going to hurt you. And let's see. It's a nice challenge. And we're going to see a Colombian challenge, right? Cucho against Reyes. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen there.
I know that the team is promoting that to the Colombian community around the area, right? We saw a Spanish language promo earlier this week saying this is the Cucho versus Reyes matchup, and you have to be here. Curious what you thought of the atmosphere on opening night at Red Bull Arena, and you know, here's to hoping that New York can draw as many fans as they did. You know, now the long slog begins of trying to fill the arena every single week, and they're not going to have opening night necessarily to do that. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I was surprised to see lines when I arrived at the stadium. I was surprised to see so many long lines of people trying to get into the stadium, and it was actually a very good feeling to see that happening. Even though they were giving out, it was the first game of the season, they were giving out beanies, which is nice too. It cannot happen every single game. But it should be fun. It should be exciting. The fan base, I think the score in general didn't help to keep the momentum going into this game. But I'm expecting a large crowd again. It should be fun. The front office did a very good job at the first game, the home opener too. But I'm expecting a massive presence of fans. It was so good. The atmosphere inside the stadium, the Tifu, South Ward was singing the whole game,
yeah,
which was
fantastic.
Nice too.
Yeah.
And it really gives you good reasons to go watch that team again. I'm expecting a large crowd.
The Red Bulls find themselves in 12th place. It's early in the year. They haven't won in their last number of matches at Red Bull Arena, going back to last year with their playoff match, obviously, and frankly, a disappointing scoreless draw. Is this a must-win game on Saturday for New York to show themselves, to show the fan base, to show the MLS East that they actually are a team that's to be reckoned with? Is it too soon to call Saturday a must-win?
No, I think it's time. It's time to step up and win this game and tell the MLS community, hey, guys, I'm here. I'm going to be fighting for the top positions in the Eastern Conference. And even to keep the fan base interest about this team. You know, if that record, the home record from the last season, happens again, that can be a problem. And we're going to see what happened in the playoff. In the playoffs, if this team qualifies, which I'm expecting them to do so. And a funny story here. The last time they won at home, I was not working on that game against Charlotte. I took my kids to the stadium, and it was so good to be in the stands after a long season. So maybe I should bring my kids again.
There you go. That's the key, right? It's amazing to think that pundits could actually impact a game for the positive and not jinx by sharing crazy stats or anything like that, I know. You have a prediction for Saturday night before we let you go?
2-1. 2-1 Red Bulls. Vanzier is going to score the first game, and Burke has been a very good player. I didn't expect him to do so, but he's filling in on a very positive way.
Gustavo Guimaraes covers the Red Bulls and the Philadelphia Union at Territorio MLS. Gustavo, thank you so much for joining us. I know we'll speak to you as the season rolls on.
Mark, always a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invitation, and we'll see you there.
All right. We've got more Seeing Red coming up after this short break.
You're listening to Seeing Red.
Back on Seeing Red, the New York Soccer Roundup. I'm here with Joe. It's Mark Fishkin. Welcome back. One email this week, and it's by Jordan Glass.
Jordan says, gents, thought I'd toss a few more hot takes from the game, starting with a tinfoil hat topic first. Those are my favorite kind to discuss.
Yes.
Is it just me, or did the grounds crew clean more of the Minnesota attacking side starting the second half? Or was there just that much more play in the Red Bulls attacking side during the first half? I mean, we tackled that earlier.
Yes, and sometimes the tinfoil hat guys are right.
The tinfoil was used to help clear that side of the
field.
That's
right.
Morgan looks so dangerous when he plays further up the field. Yes, of course. Love seeing Reyes head straight to Struber to celebrate the goal. Then the entire team joined. Awesome. Doesn't look like Cornell likes the cold much. Looks like he told the team to not play the ball back to him after he slipped on the goal kick.
Well, I mean, right.
Yeah.
I can't do this. Don't make me look bad, guys.
Don't take those chances. I'll be the first to admit when I'm wrong, and I've been wrong about Harper. Showed well against Nashville, and I thought he would have been great in the snow. He's still more of a right midfielder than a right back, but it'll work. And I think he's supposed to be back this week, from what
Hopefully.
I hear.
Hopefully. We'll find out tomorrow.
Happy to see Struber make aggressive subs in the 65th minute. The only problem, those changes didn't bring any goals. I'm debating if my next word should be, it's only three games, or the lack of goals is now a continuing trend. I'm going with, it's only three games. I'm not clicking the panic button. Yet. New York is red, Jordan Glass. What do you think? Panic button?
No, definitely. No. Certainly not after last week. I mean, they got a point on the road, which is fine. If they're unable to score or get 3 points out of Saturday night, and listen, Columbus is a very good team.
Yes.
So it will be a challenge. But as we talked about earlier, as we talked about with Gustavo, New York has played teams the last couple of weeks that have really just sat back. And I don't know if under Nancy they can do that. It would be counter to the way they play. For them to just sit in a low block and say, break us down. So for all the reasons we talked about in our first segment, I think, I mean, if there are no goals or a loss on Saturday night, then I think we start head scratching. But as you said, Joe, Dante should start this game. Maybe he only goes 60 minutes, but he's got to be there from the jump to see him and Burke and Luquinhas and Morgan all working together. I think that's what Red Bull fans absolutely need to see. And we know the effort will be there, certainly out of the box. As you said earlier, they just have to convert. So much of this strategy, as we've known for the last, in the Red Bull soccer era, the energy drink soccer era, is get that first goal, make the opponent stretch out in order to equalize, and then punish them, and game over.
Yep.
And
yep,
so
that's exactly right.
They have to do it.
Yeah, and I think getting Van Zier, I know obviously they're playing together in practice. They're familiar with each other, but game situations are so different than what you're facing in practice. And getting them out there, getting the rotations, getting them used to how each other move off the ball in conditions where you could actually pass the ball is going to be good. And I don't necessarily expect gangbusters right away, but I think that you'll see an improvement in the way that this attack flows, getting Van Zier some more minutes.
As we record, Tigres has gone ahead of Orlando in Central Florida, 1-0. That first leg ended in a scoreless draw with El Pupo standing on his head. Are away goals? Are there away goals in CCL? Do we know?
I think that there are.
Which means Orlando has to get to two.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% positive, but
there's no
so.
Shame in losing to Tigres. They should be the favorite to win the tournament. Not looking great for them. In any case, Joe calls Saturday night's match a
foolhardy 2-0 win.
I'm going to call it a 1-1 draw. I'm Mark Fishkin. He's Joe Goldstein. Thanks to Zach Feldman for his stats. Thank you for listening to episode 523 of Seeing Red. Thank you to Gustavo Guimaraes for stopping by as well. We'll be back next week, everyone. Have a good night.
Thanks for listening to Seeing Red. Get us anywhere you get your podcasts and always at seeingredny.com.